The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Thank you all for coming. This is a lot of people. I was wondering who would come. I was wondering if anybody would come. I knew that the board members would come. So this is kind of special for me. So thank you very much. And it's a beautiful thing in life to have great vision of what's possible, to be able to go forth and try to benefit the world. And I think it's really good to have a great vision as long as you have no expectation and or no need connected to it. So we've created this nonprofit inspired by a particular vision, and it began with the idea of somehow coming out of our Buddhist community, being of service to the wider world. And Nancy and Jeff have medical backgrounds in the third world. Jeff has done many medical Jeff is a doctor. He's done many medical missions in Central America, and I think primarily with Catholic groups, and they've been very meaningful for him. And Nancy is a nurse practitioner, or in that context, nurse midwife, and has done a lot of research for her PhD in women with AIDS in Africa. And so she's been there and knows intimately the difficulties of the medical care in Africa, parts of Africa. And so in the conversations with the two of them, the idea of taking Jeff's experiences of doing medical missions and doing it in the Buddhist context came up. And so we spent some time thinking about it and doing some research and exploration, looked at the different options of places we might be able to go. I talked to a few people to see if there were other people interested in coming. And almost everyone that I asked who had some kind of, might have some interest or skills in this area, was very enthusiastic about this. So it seemed like this is something that could have a beautiful life. And so then we set it in motion. And Jeff did a lot of work in incorporating. So we have this nonprofit status, which creates a great vehicle for which this kind of thing can work financially, because it allows for donations and allows for bank accounts and allows us a structure for to support this kind of endeavor. And Jeff has already gone now on a medical mission to Cambodia in January, right, in order to get the lay of the land. To do a medical mission takes a lot. It takes a lot of care, responsibility, because it's possible to do these kinds of things with a lot of good intentions and actually create more harm in the community that you serve than benefit. So it has to be done with very, very careful, very conscious of the impact it can have. And so Jeff began now just doing one for another agency. And Jeff's planning to go back to do research to kind of explore the area, connect to different agencies and hospitals, and get a really good sense of where we're best, most useful and most effective to kind of offer our, what we might have to offer. Nancy also has plans to go. She was able to get a grant. Imagine that, we're up and running, Nancy got a grant. She's a professor in epidemiology now. And so in her field, this kind of makes a connection, and she was able to get a grant to go. And she was going to go in February or March, but now it's been delayed. When are you thinking of?
I'm probably
the same time as Jeff. So this is, so we're trying to do this responsibly, carefully. The first medical mission in Cambodia, I'm more impatient than Jeff is. I think we should do it sooner, but I think it's better to do it carefully and build the pieces slowly. And so it probably won't be, my guess, for at least another year and a half, maybe, before we have all the pieces in place. And that also, I've learned now, and I'm getting kind of to be a little bit older, that time goes quickly. and uh, and how important it is to do things slowly and steadily and kind of create the good foundation rather than rushing into it. And so I'm very grateful for Nancy and Jeff that this is actually what they're trying to do. And so we have the shell, empty shell, to do things. And so we've made some announcements to people about what we're trying to do already, and rightfully so, some people have said, well, it's great that you want to go do in Cambodia, but there are people here in this country who have many of the same challenges. There's a lot of poverty, lack of medical care for people, and why limit it to there? Sometimes when I hear people say this, in my ears at least, I don't know if it's true, occasionally, but in my ears, what I hear is a sense of moral obligation, that you're supposed to do this, you should do this. And myself, I'm not interested in moral obligation at all. And I don't think it's, as I said in the talk, I don't think that's what how Buddhism comes across with its Buddhist spirituality. I think it's oppressive to be morally obligated. But rather, the human heart, the inner human life is so beautiful. And if we just get out of the way and allow what's in there wants to come out and be expressed, that we'll do all the same things as we would if we felt morally obligated, but we will do it we'll do it with joy and delight, and it'll be coming from us rather than from something outside that we should do it. And this is very important. So the idea of this, we have this empty shell of this organization now, gives opportunity for people who have the joy, the inspiration to do something, perhaps to come forward and be involved and do something. If it's there are people who are inspired and it's meaningful for them to want to do something in the United States, that's a wonderful thing to do and nice to do. Jeff already, because of people who brought it up, I think it prompted Jeff to be inspired. And so Nancy also went yesterday. So maybe they'll talk about a little bit what they did yesterday. But they went, you know, here there was a medical fair in the Bay Area where medical people who want to offer their services for free come to this huge area, this big fair, and then people who don't have medical access can come and work and get free medical care on Saturday. And so we started locally that way yesterday. So for me, this is a very meaningful thing, and I hope to see that our Buddhist community can feel an intimate connection with the people in many communities around the world, and that, I don't know if serving is the right word, but responding, that our love, our care, our sense of connection can flow in this, in the form providing our goodwill services, our goodwill help, labor to help people who need it. My vision of Buddhist kind of spiritual care in all times, whether it's is that it also serves the people who are doing it. So I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to go do any kind of service work to others in the way that it's a practice for oneself, that it purifies our own hearts, that we see ourselves, learn about ourselves. And sometimes it's said that this kind of work serves the servers more than the helpers, the people being helped, because of how transformative it can be to feel the connection, direct connection to other people. I was at, as I said this morning, I was at a huge conference this last 3 days of Buddhist teachers from mostly North America, but a little bit from Europe and other places, who came together to from all the different major Buddhist traditions here in the West. And a number of people in our Insight tradition had learned about this or knew about it, or when I told them about it, were really inspired by it, the idea. And the idea that this Insight World Aid could be an extension, not of IMC community, but really be a kind of be an organization that kind of belongs to or comes out of the extended national or international Insight meditation movement around. And so that the impulse that people have to want to be of service to others in this kind of way can be, that impulse can be, have a channel for to come forth. I talked to Rodney Smith, who's the Insight teacher, a very large group in Seattle, And he was delighted and was very interested in seeing, you know, maybe they can do a benefit up there to help raise money, because medical mission in Cambodia is like it's another empty shell that we can fill. And there's many ways of filling it. So if the funds are there, we can fill it with medical supplies of all kinds. And so there's, you know, there's no end to the need. And so there's no end to what can be done. And our task, I think, being, what, there's many tasks, but one of our tasks as Buddhist practitioners is to do this out of love and while being relaxed. Because if we can't be relaxed, then I don't know if our goodness will have much real goodness in the world. I think that relaxed means that we can stay calm, we can stay peaceful, we can not get caught up in our attachments, our fears, our greeds, or, you know. And I think this is really important. Really important. And so I hope that the Insight World Aid is a wonderfully non-obligatory, relaxed powerhouse that will have a big and beautiful impact on the world, and that it will inspire many of you, but also inspire many people in the extended Buddhist communities that we're connected to. So it really feels like it's a collective effort coming out of the worldwide Buddhist world. And I think it's an idea that's kind of due in the world right now. It's the last things I'll say. There's, if you go abroad and look in places where people do aid work, you see that a lot of it tends to be Christian-based. And that's wonderful. But it's a little bit odd that the Buddhists don't have corresponding organizations that can also do it, especially when you go to Buddhist countries like Cambodia. And you see that so much of the major work's being done by Christians, and where are the Buddhists? You know, what's going on with them? We have now in the Buddhist world a number of very large and dedicated kind of service or aid organizations that are coming up, bubbling up or thriving in Asia itself. Some of them are in Taiwan. And Taiwan, there's very dynamics that are happening this way in Taiwan, coming out of Taiwan into the rest of the world. There's some in Sri Lanka and a little bit in Thailand. And so there's a little bit, you know, some going on. but there's not so much coming out of the West in this way. But it's kind of like finally, we're like babies, the convert Buddhists or the Insight movement. So we're kind of like growing up now. And so now there's beginning to happen, this interest. We're large enough now and stable enough that it makes sense to begin extending ourselves out into the wider world. And so the first thing that happened a couple of years ago in this regard was Bhikkhu Bodhi was involved in starting a Buddhist Global Relief, which is a beautiful organization that function is to raise money to fund particular projects that have to do with helping to and world hunger, different communities around the world. And they have something like 23 projects they're supporting now. That's right. Okay. And so now, we're forming Insight World Aid as a little bit different, a different mission than Buddhist Global Relief, but a little bit in partnership with it. Bhikkhu Bodhi is an advisor for us. It's pretty cool. And Jeff sits on the board of both, right? Oh, not on the board, but he's quite involved. So, Jenny is Jeff's partner, and I get the impression, I apologize, I don't know all that you do, but I get the impression that you're quite involved as well.
I cook and do the laundry and take care of the house. Yeah.
That sounds like Inside World Aid to me. So Nancy and Jeff have some slideshows about this work and about this that they're going to show. And so they take about 20 minutes for the two of them, and then I'll say a few more words and we can answer some questions you might have. And you want to use the handheld mic?
So welcome, everyone. I'm so encouraged to see so many of you here today. It really warms my heart a lot because this is a passion of mine, and it's nice to know that the interest and the support is here. So as I thought about preparing a little slideshow for you, and as I thought about trying to present an overview of the healthcare in Cambodia, I thought, well, what would be the best way to do that? And I guess the way I thought I would do it is to invite you to go back in time and to really imagine trying to provide health care and take care of illness in a very different time, a much more primitive time, because this is how it is in much of the country. 80% of the population lives rurally, some very isolated from medical care. So let's look at some of the facts about the country. 14 million people in Cambodia, and they live in a square mileage area about like the state of Oklahoma. So if Oklahoma isn't very meaningful to you, that's about half the size of California, maybe a little bit less than half the size of California. Life expectancy is 62 years, and I've used World Health Organization statistics. In terms of the public health system in Cambodia, there are 8 national hospitals, and in these hospitals, you could probably reasonably expect to find IV drips, antibiotics that aren't outdated, and anesthesia for surgery if it was required. Then there are 76 referral hospitals, and this is the picture of one of their referral hospitals, much smaller in scope, probably 3 rooms, 4 rooms. Patients are sort of grouped together. Supplies limited, often run out. Medicines run out, poorly staffed, and not many doctors and nurses in a lot of these places. Then there are 881 functional health centers out in outlying areas. This would be sort of the village care at the village level. And in these health centers, care is very spotty. So you would be as likely to be prescribed a spirit cure as you would be any Western medicine evidence-based sort of scientific care. So when we think about how much is spent on healthcare in Cambodia, their total budget is $23,800,000 a year. That roughly evens out to about $167 per person per year for their health care. In comparison, in the United States, in 2009, we spent $2.5 trillion on health care and about $8,080 per person per year. And we by no means have the best health care in the world. So as you can see, big difference in resources, big difference in accessibility to care. So the top 3 health problems, I thought it might be important to just touch on those. So infectious diseases, and among the top contenders there are malaria, TB, and HIV/AIDS. Then, and those are sort of on an ongoing basis. Then there are episodic outbreaks, seasonal outbreaks, and these are things like cholera, dengue fever, meningitis, acute respiratory infections. And I'm going to touch on each of these a little bit more specifically, but this will give you an overview. Maternal child mortality is a big problem in Cambodia. And so I've given you the statistics. Out of every 100,000 births, 472 women die in childbirth or shortly thereafter from complications. This is as opposed to the United States, where out of every 100,000 births, 8.2 women die in this country. So big difference between 472 and 8.2. And again, the United States does not have the best statistics. We sort of move back and forth somewhere between 6th and 13th place in the world, depending on what year you look at. Infant mortality, roughly 10% of all babies die, the live births. They're born alive and they die in that first year of life in Cambodia. This is as opposed to the United States, where we have 6.2, most recent statistics from 2010, that died per 1,000 births. Under 5 mortality is another big problem. So we lose about 10% in Cambodia in the first year, and then by age 5, about another 10% dies. So this is 20% of children that are born alive, not stillbirths, not miscarriages, born alive, that die before they reach age 5. In terms of infectious diseases, as you know, malaria is a big problem worldwide. Approximately 1 million deaths per year worldwide from malaria. In Cambodia, the prevalence, that means number of people in the whole population that are infected, 15 to 40%. Obviously, in the forested areas, the more rural areas, the mountainous, heavily foliaged areas, malaria is a much bigger problem. TB, Cambodia is 9th in the world for leading in TB prevalence. So it's estimated that approximately 50% of the population is infected. And the thing that you have to understand about TB is that you can be infected and then it can lie dormant for many, many years before it starts to grow and makes you symptomatic. So symptomatic, 665 per 100,000 people. So TB is a huge problem in Cambodia. HIV/AIDS, the prevalence is 1.4% of the population is infected with HIV. And actually, this has dropped in the last 5 years. Cambodia has very actively gone to work on HIV. The tricky thing, though, that I'll point out as an epidemiologist is that, and public health person, is that prevalence can be deceiving. So we talk about prevalence dropping, but what that often means is that just a lot of people have died. And that's why the prevalence is lower. The thing that we're really interested in is the incidence. But in order to determine the incidence, you have to do special type of research studies. And those just aren't happening on any kind of regular basis there. What we do know, and this is good, you know, 1.4, but among sex workers, it's 15 to 39.9% of those are infected with HIV. So don't go to Cambodia to have sex with a sex worker, okay? influenza. I listed avian flu here, not because so many people have died of avian flu as the potential for a catastrophic problem in this area of the world. So back between 2004, 2007, you'll probably remember that a lot of domestic birds were needing to be sacrificed because they had been infected from the wild bird population with avian flu. And during that time, when the birds were being sacrificed, what happened was that there were 13 cases of where the virus was transmitted to people that were killing the birds, and all of those cases were fatal in Cambodia. So currently, the avian flu is at stage 2, and what that means is that it can go from the bird, a domestic bird or a wild bird, to a human being, but it requires direct contact of a contaminated bird to a human being. So far, it has not mutated so that it can go from direct human-to-human transmission. If that happens, if we move to stage 3, it will be a catastrophic problem because this flu goes very quickly. And in Cambodia, the surveillance, the action plan, the containment plan, and the Tamiflu stores, which is an antiviral that if given within the first hours of symptoms will help mitigate the severity of the disease, they just aren't there in Cambodia. And the government does not have the money to budget it. Now, the CDC is active trying to help Cambodia with this problem. But the real concern worldwide is that if you have one little pocket where it gets out of the box completely, it's out of the box worldwide. So avian flu is a big concern in infectious disease circles worldwide. And Cambodia, due to the poverty there, is a huge concern. So, epidemics and outbreaks. Cholera, currently there is an outbreak of cholera. It started in November, 93 new cases this year. Total of, I can't remember, something like 223 cases. But they are always at risk for cholera due to the sewage problems there and the lack of sewage system. Dengue fever is a virus, again transmitted by a mosquito, much like malaria. And dengue fever, we also, you might know it as West Nile virus. This is a typical kind of virus where you feel horrible, you feel like you want to die, and then if you have good disease-fighting capacity, you don't die from it, and after about a week to 10 days, you start to get better. The problem in places like Cambodia is that children do not do well with this. And without IV support, oxygen support, people, especially very vulnerable people, frail people like children and the elderly, will often succumb. Likewise, pneumonia and respiratory infections from seasonal flus. And 2010 was a very bad year for that in Cambodia. Typically, they lose about 3,000 to 4,000 people a year from seasonal influenza. But in the 2010, they lost 17,000. Maternal mortality. So I gave you the statistics on this. I want to explain a little bit more about the problem and why this happens. So overall, I've listed here that women have a 17% chance of dying during their reproductive years. And part of the problem is lack of skilled birth attendants, midwives, and also an inability to access emergency obstetrical care, getting a C-section in a timely fashion when they're out in these village areas. That resource just does not exist in Cambodia. Another problem, however, is intimate partner violence. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the next slide. And in fact, we can go there. We'll talk about infant mortality. I'll go back. The intimate partner violence is a result of the post-traumatic stress disorder that many of these people are suffering from. And I'll talk about that more, but it especially affects women. And women's health care in general throughout the country is at a much lower level than men's. Part of this is because when you hear about the literacy statistics, you'll see 65% as their literacy rate. But women, it's 25%. So it follows with healthcare, everything. Women are just second-class citizens there. Going on with the maternal child health statistics, infant mortality. So I said that 400, 10% of children die in the first year. And again, this is respiratory infections, so they get a cold, it goes to pneumonia, they don't have the antibiotics to take care of it, and the IVs and the respiratory therapy, and they succumb. Undernutrition, a huge problem there. And you might, if you're, you know, paying attention here, you might be asking, well, why would undernutrition be so much of a problem in the first year of life if women in general breastfeed their babies? Well, it's because the mothers are underfed and lack in nutrition. So if you don't have a well-nourished mother, she's not going to produce quality breast milk for that baby. Diarrhea is a huge problem, and this is a reflection of food safety, water safety in the country. And then the poor feeding practices, typically, formula for infants in need, that doesn't exist. And even if you have poor water quality, formula is no panacea. But what typically happens is they just supplement from the family pot. So if they're having rice, they just thin it down and try to supplement the baby's feeding with that. But if a baby is not ready to digest that, then what that causes is little micro hemorrhages in the gut. It makes them more susceptible than to taking in the bacteria from the water, from the unclean food, and it sets up this vicious circle where then they lose even more weight and are more undernourished due to the diarrhea. So the under five mortality, again, pneumonia, huge problem. Upper respiratory infections very quickly go into pneumonia. Meningitis is a big problem. Malaria is a big problem. especially as you get toddlers and they're out wandering around, it's not so easy to, keep them under a mosquito net as even it is an infant. And again, inadequate nutrition. So World Health statistics indicate that 40% of all children are stunted in Cambodia. And this just doesn't mean that we have small children or little, thin children. This means that their mental capacity is also impaired due to this stunting. And 40% stunted, 30% of children actually qualify as starving by World Health standards. Okay, so let's talk about post-traumatic stress and violence. So, we all heard about the catastrophic massacres that occurred during the Pol Pot years. But what we don't really know is, and aren't aware of, is that a lot of the trauma and a lot of the terrorism went on following those years. So in 1991 to 1993, as a result of the Paris Peace Accords in 1991, the UN took a very bold step, and they went in and they basically took over the country for 2 years with the idea that they were going to try to institute this as a democracy, try to bring about a fair election. And there was a lot of enthusiasm about that. There was a lot of encouraging initial words about that coming out of it. The problem is that it didn't really work, and I think most experts and political analysts would agree that that was pretty much a failed attempt. The five major countries, the U.S., China, France, Russia, and Japan, together gave $3.5 billion to this experiment to try to make it work. The problem is that the elections themselves were probably fair enough, but they failed to get a majority government. So then between the two major parties, the Communist Party and the Imperial Party, the king's son ran, they had to try to form a coalition government. And those two parties hated each other. So what they did with their huge secret police and individual police forces and armies is they essentially had sort of a civil war and a lot of terrorism, a lot of motorcycles driving by, black visor helmet, throw a bomb into a crowd or a community meeting in an area that supported the other side. And so the terror for these people, the trauma, really continued. 40% of citizens are considered to be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is a huge number. You can imagine our veterans coming back who suffer from this. Well, imagine if roughly half of your country was suffering from it. And the interesting thing, interesting from a research standpoint, but in the medical literature, now what is being written up is that it doesn't just end with the people who lived through that era. It really is a second generation problem now where the children of those parents are exhibiting signs and have learned that behavior. And because of the rage, the periodic rage that comes about from the sufferers, there's a lot of family violence. And so a third of all women experience intimate partner violence and abuse. So what are the priorities that the Ministry of Health and also the World Health Organization as part of the developmental goals to be met by now, 2020, we just passed the 2010 goals, now we're into the 2020 goals. So this is what the country has identified that they really want to work on, to lower maternal child health mortality. This will largely come through increasing the number of midwives, skilled birth attendants, and trying to make emergency obstetrical services for a safe cesarean section possible, even in the outlying areas of the country. And then also simple things like zinc supplementation, which really helps them fight pneumonia or be able to withstand pneumonia. That's such a simple, inexpensive thing, but really makes a big difference. Monitoring drinking water and having safe wells and sewage treatment. And then control of communicable disease outbreaks, largely through immunization programs, but also through having an adequate surveillance action plan, a response that can be done quickly. So this means that community volunteers have to be trained, and they can't just be trained once. It has to be upgraded all the time so that that can go into effect immediately. One of the biggest problems is in Cambodia is there just is such a lack of microbiology labs, so that even if you had the personnel, even if you have the medicine, if you don't have the lab to be able to determine the offending organism, you're up a creek without a paddle. So it's sort of like dominoes, you know, you need the whole thing there in place. And then to lower illicit drug use. Heroin is a big problem in Cambodia. And it's trafficked back and forth across the Thai border and also Vietnam and Laos, all that Southeast Asia area. But trafficking of people is really the bigger problem, and especially children. Children that are sold by their families into prostitution, especially girls, because girls are valued less highly than boys. And these are little girls. And with the advent of AIDS and HIV, the thinking among pedophiles tends to be that you need to go younger and younger to make sure that they aren't infected. And that has created a huge child abuse problem worldwide. And Cambodia is no different. So big jobs ahead, big goals. But you can help. And we need your help. We don't just need medical volunteers. There's a lot of infrastructure work that goes into a trip like this. And we need computer savvy people. We need data collection people. We need people who can paint a building or construct, a clinic. We need all kinds of help. And so if you're interested, please do sign up. Educating yourself is one of the best things that you can do, and spreading the word. And then also donating, that's always appreciated. So we're going to have time for questions as a group at the end, but if somebody has a specific question about what I've presented, I'll take one or two questions right now. Yes.
How do you protect yourself with all of the infectious diseases besides taking all the
Oh, okay. So the question was, how would a volunteer protect themselves if they were to go? Well, certainly you need to get the immunizations. With malaria, you would need to take the malaria prophylaxis while there. You start before you go, and then you take it while you're there in the country. I would not encourage people who are in some way immunocompromised to go into a situation like this. But I've never really gotten sick anywhere that I've been in the world. I've been very lucky. So, you just go. Yes.
What is the role of the local Buddhist monasteries and the Buddhist establishment in engaging in this issue at all, in any part of it?
So Jeff did his work actually in a monastery. So I'm going to defer that. Do we have a handheld mic? And maybe you can just address that right now.
So the question is, what is the role of the local Buddhist groups, the monasteries, the Sangha in Cambodia in healthcare?
Was that? Well, any part of the problems that you're missing?
Yeah, the experience I had, Buddhism was almost wiped out in Cambodia with the Khmer Rouge, and it's coming back with a vengeance. It's being rebuilt. A lot of the Buddhist leaders went into exile. Many of them were killed. And currently it's in transition. So traditionally the monastery was the hub of society. It was, the monks were leaders. They were really involved in community service. That was wiped out, and it's coming back. They're really rebuilding a lot of monasteries. There's a movement for a lot of people to go into monasticism in Cambodia as a way to a better life. And that's usually a transitory experience. Young people go to the monastery to get an education and usually disrobe. I'm going to show you some slides and talk about exactly how the monks played a role at this particular province that I went to. But so your question's complicated and my answer's kind of all over the place. But there's a lot of NGOs, also non-government organizations, both Cambodian and foreign in Cambodia now. So it's a really exciting place. There's a lot of development. There's a lot of... these statistics that Nancy showed are changing rapidly as groups are coming in and targeting communities at risk. And there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm happy that we're heading in that direction.
Yeah. Yes.
Just a question that occurs to me, and I don't want to sidetrack us, so okay. This may be a question for later. You mentioned trafficking, and it's the one piece that's a little bit out of sync in that in all the other cases you suggested ways in which the issues are being addressed, and that one you didn't. And I don't know if you're aware of anything, at least perhaps you did and I missed it, but I wondered if you had any words to say on it in a simple way, or else I could speak with you later.
Well, I could go on for a long, long time on this issue because vulnerable populations and especially vulnerable women, that's really my research area. I think that immediate solutions, I think groups can be very effective calling attention to this and letting the leaders of the country know that this is a real problem. It gets a certain amount of lip service. Obviously, they've made it as one of their developmental goals. But what I can say is they have to make it as one of their developmental goals. Otherwise, NGOs and donors aren't going to give the money that they've been giving over the last, 15 years. Another way, though, is to really change policy. And so as groups like ours, small groups, as we go, and then if we write up our experiences and we publish those things and we get the word out more and more, the more that's known, knowledge uncovers it, to name things, to shine a light on it. So that's also another way. Yes, I don't want to get too many, but I'll take one more, okay?
We're also going to have to quit at 12:30 because there's another group coming up.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, so Jeff, let's switch over.
Excuse me, we have to leave. We have another commitment, but can you post project plan or something on the website? Or you better do that. You know, we have our web address on there.
Yeah, okay.
And you can visit our table on the way out. We have a table set up there. Well, thank you for your patience. Sorry we're running a little late. I'll try and pick up the pace because I know probably a lot of you have places to go. I'm very grateful and happy to be here in front of you today. This has been an exciting journey just to get to this seat and push all the papers that had to be done to create the nonprofit and make all the connections that we've made. And I know many of you in this room have already stepped up to help us out, and it's good to be here among friends. So I'd like to give an on-the-ground view of what our projects could be. And I'm with Gil. I think, IWA, Insight World Aid, is a shell now that we need you to take it to the next level, to build it into whatever it's going to be for this community. And I won't go through all of this, but we, had a particular vision in mind based on a work that I've done in the field and also Nancy's done. And so we're moving to Cambodia on our first overseas project, and you might wonder why Cambodia. Certainly, if you look at statistics, sub-Saharan Africa is probably part of the world that's in many places is in more need of aid. But we have connections in Cambodia, specifically Beth Goldring. He comes here every year and is very involved in this community. And just a lovely resource. She's lived there, I think, for 16 years or so. Very well connected. And it's also a Buddhist country. We thought maybe we should start, in a Buddhist country because we're, some of us anyways, are Buddhists. So that's why Cambodia. And it's, in terms of Southeast Asia, it is one of the poorest regions. I would say probably Myanmar, Burma, is the poorest. Laos certainly has a lot of poverty, but Cambodia, given its very difficult history, especially if you compare it with its neighbor, Thailand, is pretty impoverished, and there's a lot of problems that Nancy has delineated. So I'm going to show some slides on my experience there in January. I was part of a group. This wasn't Insight World Aid. I was a member of IWA, participating with an organized group called PeaceWorks Medical. And these are just different statistics of Cambodia, and I'm going to having a little trouble with my mic. Oh, I see. Thanks. We'll just move on to some pictures. So this is putting it in context of Southeast Asia. Here's Cambodia here, and here's Thailand and China. Indonesia, Burma. And here's another view. This is the capital, Phnom Penh. The slides I'm going to be showing you of this project I was involved in is in a small village outside of a major town of Takao. And then we also have connections with an Italian NGO in Mondulkiri, which is a more remote and impoverished province. And we've been communicating with them about possibly doing a project there. And then this is Siem Reap, where the famous Angkor Wat is. I think Nancy had a slide, and I have a slide of that too. So it's also a good tourism opportunity on the trip. So this province we were in is about almost 2-hour drive from the capital of Phnom Penh. The organization I was with is very much, I think, a model for us. It's a non-denominational organization, but it was started about a decade ago. And it's mainly medical in its orientation. And they've been to Africa. They started in Honduras, and now they're really moving their emphasis to Haiti. So I was in communication with the founder of PeaceWorks, and they've pulled out of Cambodia, which leaves an opportunity perhaps for our group to go to this particular site that I'm going to show you. And certainly it's a site that could use some help. And we had a team of about 15 people, and not everyone was medically trained. We had some people who weren't in the medical field who were very useful and very helpful. So please don't feel like you need to have any medical credentials to be involved in this group. And I just want to say from the outset, in terms of the donations, we aren't looking at using the money that we collect to pay for people's way, their transport and room and board. Usually the industry standard for this type of work is that one pays their own way, but the donations we're hoping will go for supplies that can go to the communities that we're serving, medications, equipment, and that sort of thing. So this particular trip was a 2-week trip. It was $2,600 per person. That included airfare, room and board. Also, a small amount of that money towards medications and supplies for the trip. And this was our group here. The people in blue were the health care providers. This was at a monastery. I'll talk more about it, but here's two of the monks who were translators and involved with our group. And this is a whole bunch of high school students who translated for us. It was really nice to have, I don't speak any Khmer. That's the language of Cambodia. And these are all, they've all learned English and, want to practice. So they were very enthusiastic, and we had a lot of fun. And then we interfaced with a Cambodian non-government organization called CAFS, K-A-F-S, Khmer Asian Friendship Society. And they were really our liaison on the ground. They arranged everything with the Ministry of Health in Cambodia, the transportation permits, all of that stuff. So, they organized the high school students to translate for us, the food, very important part of the trip. So we went to this pagoda in the Takao province, Barai Pagoda. And getting back to that question earlier, this is the traditional model, and it's not the case everywhere. But in this particular region, the monastery there in Barai, which was decimated during the Khmer Rouge, has been rebuilt and repopulated. And it's really much the hub of the village life. And there's a lot of social services that are provided through that monastery. There's not many monks in residence there, but they seem to interface very effectively with the community and government resources and non-government resources. This is there's a number of structures on this campus. This was where we worked out of. The bottom part of it was where we set up the clinic and took care of patients. And then we, pressed the wrong button. The upstairs part, I'll show you a picture in a minute, is a beautiful meditation hall with murals. It's It's open, walled. There's a wall in the back. And that's where we stayed, and we camped out in tents. You'll see that in a minute. So without belaboring the point, we were there for a little less than a week, and we were busy and saw a lot of patients and provided free care and medications and various treatments. And I'm just going to show a series of slides to kind of show the flow. Basically, patients would come, people would show up, and they would have various issues that they wanted to be seen for. Some of them hadn't seen doctors in quite some time. They'd be registered to find out who they are and get their information. And then they would line up, and we would bring them in groups of about 50, and they would get a health education seminar, which was provided by one of us and translated. This was one of the local school teachers who was helping us out, and his English was the best. And then from patient education, they would come to triage and get their vital signs taken. This is one of my favorite stations. And then they would see a provider. We had some doctors and physician assistants and PA students also, who would take a history and physical, make a diagnosis and a prescription, and here a couple of monks are translating for me.
What's PA?
Physician assistant, yeah. We had a naturopathic doctor, Nancy, who provided acupuncture, and the Cambodians loved it. They suffer from a lot of pain. You know, it's a agrarian life, you know, a lot of hard labor, and there's a lot of aches and pains is, you know, the bulk of what we saw. So the acupuncture gave pretty immediate relief. This is pharmacy. We brought quite a lot of basic medications that we provided for free. And so this was one area that people without medical training were very handy. It's easy to, you know, count pills and organize them and label them and help distribute them. And the monks also helped us out. So it was a lot of fun. Did some minor surgeries without anesthesia because we didn't have any. This guy had cut his hand open and came in. Oh, and I should say that the woman sewing him up is the founder of this PeaceWorks group. Her name is Pam Burwell, and she's just a phenomenal lady.
You had no lighting or nothing?
No. No, you're pretty much limited to what we can purchase or what we can bring in. And she has an arrangement with another nonprofit organization that provides medications at about 10% of what they are in the open market, specifically for this type of work. And she's limited to what she can get, you know. So I've been doing a lot of research on this, so when we go, we'll make sure we have at least a little bit of lidocaine and, you know, things like that. Other things come. The next couple of slides just to show, you know, that it was an all work and no play. You know, we had really delicious Cambodian food, which is similar to Thai food. And this is where we stayed. Kind of interesting. So really beautiful. They're constantly building this temple and, you know, the murals of different stories from the Buddha's life on the walls and the ceiling. And each of us had our own tent that we camped out in, basically, for the week that we were there. When we came into Phnom Penh, we stayed in a hotel and took a bus out. And then for the week that we're here, kind of a primitive bathroom that we shared, bucket baths where you kind of pour the water. Someone had brought a little battery-operated shower that fits into a cistern, and that was popular, but there's always plumbing problems. So it's a little roughing it, but it's also, I've traveled quite extensively. It was the safest place I've ever been. It kind of was surprising given the history of Pol Pot regime and you know, the very violent civil war and, you know, the number of landmines that have been distributed. I felt completely at ease walking around in the countryside, you know, even at nighttime. It felt very safe. And the people that we met were very hospitable and gracious. This is coconut juice happy hour. after a long day in the clinic. And the monks would chant at times and give us meditation instructions. Even though this wasn't a Buddhist group, they were interested in so they put on a demonstration for us, and that was very lovely. These are just some pictures from around the village. This is a well that was constructed by a group of Japanese engineers that also worked with this organization, CAFS, the Khmer Asian Friendship Society. And they come over in groups, and they, instead of doing medical work, they build wells. So I'm showing this slide to give you an idea of, you know, I don't know, maybe this is something we could do, or structures. Okay, I'm getting the speeded up rice paddy. Girl. That's Angkor Wat, and there was some tourism there. And I just wanted to say briefly, on a personal level, this was a very rewarding experience to go on this trip, you know, to really take the teachings of meditation and to go into a crazy environment where, you know, it's very stressful. You know, as you know, travel can be very stressful, but to be able to be of some use to people who need help, and to hold that meditatively or with the heart of compassion, with the equanimity. So I hope that is interesting and enticing. Just real briefly, a couple of slides from some local projects. These are health fairs that we participated in. And the one, there's a group of us from IWA that went on Friday to Southeast San Francisco. And we did some medical work, but they had all sorts of stations. They had a vet center, they had books, they had housing. People could make cell phones, they could set up voicemail accounts so that they would have a way to communicate with their friends and their family. The hair salon was very popular here. Here's a group of us. There's Nancy, Lynn, Bob, and me. I don't have a picture of everyone together. Nancy was working in triage. I was working in medical. Here's Linda McGrath. She was working at books, helping people find books. Okay, so it's over. Please visit our table out there. And sorry we had to truncate our presentation, but we need some help to take IWA to the next level, and some ideas and volunteers, donations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
So if you have any questions or want to discuss more of this, we'll go out in the outer hall. We have another group that meets in here in a few minutes, a couple of minutes. So if we can come out of here so they can come and set up, that would be good. Thank you.